Chapter 4. Sunrise after moonset. A man had worked his way throughout the village separating cemeterium from Cowtip's shore. After struggling past a border of protesters, he managed his first glimpse from the inside of cemeterium. A declaration was made by him.
It's time I show this city.
The protesters were mildly roaring behind him.
What a true tailor looks like!
Alexander Minter, a tailor with a knack for the craft, had managed to make it to the city before most of the other passengers. Though unlike most of the visitors to Cowtip Island, he was on the look for someone with which there was no reward or known crime affiliation. His search would take him to places he might not yet be prepared to go, and still, he searched. Speaking to himself,
I guess I should check where any people might be gathering at.
It was now dark out. The bars would be crawling with many people around this time. Before he could begin, though, his stomach rumbled. He was no drinker, but he thought it would be best not to go to the bars on an empty stomach. He started off inwards of cemeterium.
Well, it's always best to have company while you eat,
Lahara said to herself quietly. She made her way across the lobby of the hotel, taking in the architecture and mood lighting. Before she made it halfway across the floor, she noticed Dahlia sitting blankly on a couch against the wall.
If a terrorist were to attack, this would be the target right now,
Dahlia thought against her wishes.
Hey, what are you doing here?
Huh?
Dahlia realized Lahara was talking to her.
I mean, you're just sitting there.
Oh.
She tried to discover the reason.
I guess I'm just sort of at sorts for what I should do.
You hungry?
Dahlia paused, wondering why Lahara was talking to her.
Yeah, but I don't have a lot of money.
Come with me, I was just about to eat.
Dahlia got up and followed Lahara. The two were both glad not to be alone, but for separate reasons. Lahara enjoyed having company, but Dahlia feared being alone with her thoughts.
So what's your name? Mine's Lahara.
Dahlia.
Great! Look at that! We aren't strangers anymore now.
Dahlia smirked a little.
Are you new in town too?
Yep, just got here.
I've never been in a city like this.
Oh?
Lahara was getting ideas.
Then I'm going to have to show you what fun a city like this can provide. But first, let's eat.
Lahara and Dahlia entered the restaurant across the street. They were seated away from the front, but could still see the door and would notice anyone walking in.
It's on me, so don't worry about your order and just pick what sounds good.
Lahara didn't want to appear as though she was showing off.
Thank you,
Dahlia replied quietly. All of the prices were monumental. A 4-star eatery it was. And with all of the money Dahlia still had left, she couldn't afford a single meal here. She was glad she'd get a chance to eat at a place like this, though.
You guys eat out here, too?
Saxa observed the meats.
I do. Sometimes you've got to worry about the meat attracting something else, though.
Candy looked over at Whisk, who was beginning to stand up. Shen was slowly moving to the side to get in flanking position. Candy rearranged her positioning from a sit to a crouch. Xaxa was just watching them, still smiling.
I could use a good stretch,
he said, almost surprised none of the others were responding. Whisk conjured his beast sword. Xaxa immediately replied by lunging forth towards Whisk. As this happened, Shanaga moved to behind Xaxa, and Candy brandished her knife. Should she attack him from here, or should she go with step by step, she pondered. Xaxa got within striking distance of Whisk, and as he swung his sword, Xaxa jumped back out of range. His speed was far superior to Whisk's. Xaxa was now surrounded on three sides. Seeing this, Candy attempted to strike as Xaxa landed. He repositioned to kick her should she get any closer, and Candy faded her movement to the side.
Candy, we'll keep him busy.
He glanced over at Shanaga.
You wait for an opening.
Candy nodded. Continuing,
if there is no opening, you run.
Immediately after Whisk finished talking, Saxa rushed Whisk. He motioned to throw a punch, a wide left hook. Whisk swung the sword, chopping off his arm. Saxa's movement finished with his left shoulder facing Whisk, whose sword was now positioned out to his side, leaving his stomach open, but the sword was prepared for a perfect stabbing lunge. Before Whisk could enact the stab, Saxa's severed arm came flying at Whisk's side before it even had hit the ground. Whisk was launched to the right of Xaxa, towards the trees. Shen took this opportunity to transform. Fur made way to pure muscle as his skin was stretched over a growing body, bones gaining mass, and the properties of his makeup shifting. Xaxa continued his turning motion to face Shen. Candy moved to catch Whisk before he hit a tree.
Dan, what the hell was that?
Candy noticed the arms swirling back around.
His limbs can fly or something, it appears.
Well, let's not attack his arms then.
Whisk got back up, in pain from the attack, as the severed limb had moved at amazing speed.
I'll use the forest for cover before attacking.
Candy started towards the trees before the arm reached them.
I have to back up, Shen.
Whisk stayed behind. Candy began step by step with both legs, building up power with each step. As Whisk would be dealing with the arm, she could have enough time for 10 steps before she'd need the speed. Shen, with bear-like paws and a massive 15-foot height, was slashing at Xaxa, who was dodging around in circles. Xaxa couldn't be too sure of Shen's strength now, so he opted to avoid the attacks instead of blocking, as the attacks might have enough force to break his bones, which he couldn't manage mid-fight. Once Xaxa was on the opposite side of Shen from the campsite, Shen jumped at him, forcing Xaxa to either retreat or maneuver in a drastic way. He chose to jump over Shen in a large arc. As soon as he landed, Whisk ran up with his sword, simultaneously dodging the floating arm's attack. Xaxa ducked his horizontal swing and punched Whisk in the stomach, stunning him for a few seconds while Xaxa grabbed him and threw him at Shen, who sidestepped. Shen and Whisk then jumped towards Xaxa, but the arm was launched into Shen's side. Since Shen was in the air and the arm came in so fast, Shen was sent flying away from the two others, despite his increased weight in his transformed form. Xaxa figured that the best course of action to take against Shen was to put distance between them. Whisk, who was still mid-air, was kicked. Whisk blocked the attack with his sword, but was still taken to the ground. Xaxa was surprised he didn't try to counter the kick with the sword instead.
He must have figured out my ability,
Xaxa thought.
Damn, if both Candy and I are taken out, Shen won't have anyone to leech from, and will run out of men too quickly, putting him into his sleep. I've got to stay closer to him than Candy for now, so that she can have her full men for an attack.
Whisk monologued to himself. Candy had built up enough steps to trigger step by step, and now had 5 minutes to deal the needed blow on Xaxa to end the fight. Chief Rether, Detective Blound, Kasumi Matsumoto, and Gorik Huntsman were all discussing their options in the police station.
Time is of the essence in this case,
mentioned Blound. Kasumi agreed with a nod.
I think that before we go searching for anything, that we get as much information as we can from the man in custody.
Gorik agreed. Chief Rether was about to ask a question when Blound read his body language.
I'll lead the interrogation,
Blound declared before the chief had a chance to ask. This excited Kasumi, as she felt she might get a chance to show off her hatsu, but then realized it might fall into cruel and unusual, and decided to wait until it might be absolutely needed. Plus, she wondered whether she should get permission from the chief first.
It's too bad Detective Slaxon isn't still here.
He turned to face Gorik and Kasumi.
He had this hatsu that was really great in interrogations. It would force them to answer one question or the other. There were some logistics, but it really sped things up.
What happened to Detective Slaxon?
Gorik was gathering information on the history of the station. Blound was looking down.
He left when he got the chance. A part of me wishes I had followed. Sometimes it feels like I'll be here forever, you know?
Am I the only one who actually likes it here?
Rether jested, chuckling. The group went towards the interrogation room. Gorik and Kasumi waited in the observing room while Rether brought the man into the interrogation room. Blound was being Gorik and Kasumi, about to enter the interrogation, trading places with the chief.
How was the trip here?
Kasumi felt it necessary to get to know Gorik a bit better for their collaboration to have maximum potential.
It was pretty smooth. Met some interesting people on the ferry. I feel like it's just a matter of time before this city starts blowing up. How was your ride?
Choppy.
She smiled.
Much less interesting it sounds.
Ha, well, I'd take choppy over interesting most days.
I bet with as experienced as you are, you've had more than your fair share of interesting.
What about you? I hear you've had quite the interesting past as well.
Maybe.
She wasn't sure how to play off her accomplishments to someone with a track record like his.
Some of it was both choppy and interesting.
Now that's a conundrum.
Gorik noticed Blound open the door.
Well, let's do our best to make sure we can have a nice, smooth, boring experience here in town.
He ended with a smile. Kasumi smiled back, and then focused her attention on the conversation about to unfold before them. The chief slid in beside them to watch as well.
So, mister, let's see, what is your name now?
The man looked up at Blound.
You don't know?
Thing is, I want to see how cooperative you're going to be.
Sure.
So, Baruka, am I saying that name right?
Yeah.
Okay, so, Baruka, I'm going to be blunt and honest with you.
He made himself comfortable.
We don't care about you. We just want to know about your friends.
Baruka tried to play it cool.
I don't have any friends. I think you've got the wrong guy. I'm just a nobody who wants to make it back home and take a nap.
All right, so, while we're on the subject of naps, are you aware you were breaking and entering on the lot for your little snooze time?
Baruka was quiet.
The city owns that. It was repossessed, but worse than that, we heard there was a gambling ring that happened to be set up there a few nights ago. Did any of that interrupt your sleep? Or maybe was that why you were sleeping?
Does it really matter?
Well, you see,
Blown thought a bit.
The city's got a few new visitors right now, and
he formulated a unique approach given the context of events.
We're worried that you guys in your gambling ring might wind up being killed.
Killed?
Yes.
Blound was eyeing Baruka.
We need to find your friends before things really get out of hand. You must know firsthand that your Nen is outmatched by several others here in town.
Mine may have been, but not the others.
Ah, so you do have friends. I knew a popular guy like you'd have your own little club.
Shit.
Baruka spat out.
Yes, shit. It's what you're in. We can help you out, but I'm not kidding that you and your friends are going to be in danger if you don't stop.
Chief knocked on the door. Gorik had wanted a turn at the guy. Blound reluctantly gave the control over. He knew that the time it would take to swap out would give Baruka time to think things over, and Gorik could play the role of striker, coming in with offers and ultimatums. Blound made progress, but Baruka had an idea of who Blound was, behaviorally speaking. Gorik could be a fresh slate after Baruka was primed for a choice.
Hello, I'm Gorik. Nice to meet you.
He took the seat. Baruka was silent.
We're a little bit stuck here.
Gorik continued.
We don't want any deaths here. We also want to stop you guys from taking advantage of others. We can bust our asses and take you in, or we can let the wolves eat you. We here, the chief especially, we all believe in a fair trial and you making reparations for what you've done.
Reparations?
Yes, I'm here to give you a choice. There really is only one option for us all, to get a win, you see. And we'd like that. If you choose the other one, we'll try a different approach until eventually you give us the best solution.
Best for you, though.
That's not wrong. The best solution for us is the best solution for you as well.
So?
He was impatient, waiting for Gorik to continue.
What is the choice, then?
Answer a few questions, or we make your friends think you ratted and use you as bait.
What? They sound the same to me.
Think about it. You are in a tough situation. We can get you out of this all without your friends realizing you were ever arrested. Or we can make a show out of you and leave you out to dry. When they come to kill you, we get them, and you all get punished.
I don't believe this.
Well, you got yourself into this. Now you are going to have to let us get you out of it.
All we wanted was to make our last paycheck before leaving this dying place. We lost our jobs, but we'd be stuck here with no future unless we could get enough money to leave during travel season. We just wanted a chance, the chance the city took from us.
Do you see any chance here?
He paused.
If you want your chance at a life to leave this place, then you need to listen to me.
Kasumi and Retha were watching it all.
Not totally surprised they feel righteous.
Kasumi added,
yet they aren't sticking it to the city, just to the residents.
They feel cheated, so they're cheating to recover what they've lost. It's an unfortunate side effect of the businesses leaving this place due to the economy. Leaves many unemployed and stranded, going into debt, losing their wealth. Many people would resort to crime just in order to put themselves on an even financial playing field with most of the others around them.
They were naive to think that abusing others, who may be in a similar boat as them, would be the key to reclaiming their future.
I agree.
We should lean on providing an out, a path that leads to a normal life, promises of careers, and make sure they get processed outside of the island.
I guess I really am the only one who likes it here,
he smirked. Baruka was answering all of Blound and Gorik's questions. How many others? Why blank garages? What are the names of the others? How do they move? He answered all but their names. When asked why he was asleep, he provided a detailed response.
My Hatsu. I force Zetsu on both myself and the other person for 5 minutes. However, a condition is in place since most people I use it on are stronger Nen users than myself. I am forced into a sleep after the 5 minutes are up. The amount of time I am asleep depends on how strong their Nen is. Several times they leave me to sleep while they move locations. That lady, the emitter?
Bertha?
Sure, her Nen must have been much stronger than I thought. I used my Hatsu on her so she couldn't attack us while they ejected her. But it turned out I was asleep for days. I can't believe she was that strong.
Bertha's strong, all right.
It was just pure luck that I awoke right before someone came to the garage to investigate.
After the interrogation, Blound and Gorik stepped out to discuss the next plan of action with Kasumi and the chief. They revealed that there were three others, whose names they didn't know because he wouldn't share. The group used empty garages because of a key member's Hatsu, which is how they run their operation. It is also how they are easily able to move. Baruka didn't explain the specifics of it, as he only understood its effect, but explained how it was a room generated with everything inside of it. Basically, it functioned as a storage room that he could create within a large enough space. He said they ran into all kinds of problems with the quality of the machinery in the room, as the creator was only somewhat knowledgeable on trades of the sort and could only manifest the room to his previous design.
So how do we catch these guys?
Blound was postulating a few plans while he spoke.
We're going to have to catch them as they set up shop.
Chief Rether replied,
We had a lead on this, actually. We felt like if we looked into the empty garages they were in, as in the ownership, we could see a pattern.
Did you find anything?
Gorik wasn't sure this was the right approach.
Sadly, no.
Kasumi entered the conversation.
Then we stake out the remaining empty garages in the city.
I was thinking something like that,
Blound added.
It makes sense.
Gorik was visibly thinking.
They haven't returned to any previous locations before, right?
Not that we know of.
Chief knew the details on the case pretty well.
Then we're going to need to check out multiple locations at once.
Gorik was looking back and forth at all of them.
Considering not all locations might have been reported and they might not act each night, we should determine which two would be most likely based on what we know.
Blound wanted precision in all cases. When he worked with Slaxon, they managed to be sticklers for details, which helped them more times than not. The habit had not yet died for Blound. Blound and Chief began gathering informational maps on the city and files from the case to be examined right now. Kasumi and Gorik stood aside, as they were of no help, this not being their station.
It's tough, a case like this.
Kasumi started.
There's many reasons why I'd agree, but I'm wondering what reason you had in mind.
Motive.
Ah, yes, I see what you mean.
Many cases are crimes committed by people with a psychological reasoning. Power, control, irrational reasoning, but...
These guys make sense.
Exactly. Most of the time, you can just treat them, and that stops the crime, but here, I just...
Plus, when you go home, you can usually tell yourself, that guy was just crazy. But these are people that were driven to this.
To think that the world can drive logical people to seek crime. It almost hurts that this happens.
Gorik looked over at her.
Sometimes upholding the law doesn't always make you feel like the good guy.
Or girl.
Kasumi darted eyes at him with a smile.
Right. I just mean guy as in slang or something.
Gorik almost seemed flustered.
Okay, we've got it laid out. Come take a look.
Chief announced to them. Lahara was paying the check while Dahlia was struggling.
If she hears one of my thoughts, she might be weirded out too much.
She was thinking to herself.
But that Anya didn't seem to care. In fact, she seemed to enjoy it.
Hey, ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay, because I have some other ideas.
Lahara was enjoying being able to show someone else the ropes. The two were stepping outside, agreeing that they should come back the next day for a breakfast meal. The restaurant was open all day, and not just dinner. It is rare for such a gourmet eatery. Yet on the island, with few options, it made sense to stay open for each meal. The place had exquisite seafood, but for lunch, there were meals out of the delicious, magical beasts from the forest. The two weren't sure if they should wait for lunch or come back at breakfast to see what seafood offerings they have then. Lahara would be paying, of course. As soon as they got outside, they ran into a man.
Oh, excuse me, ladies. I'm just wondering where the nearest bar is to here.
Not sure, we're new here as well.
Lahara was taking initiative to return to their night quickly.
Well, that just...
He immediately paused.
I'm sorry, but I have to measure.
He was looking at Dahlia.
What?
Huh?
Lahara was also taken aback.
You too, miss.
He was now referring to Lahara.
Well?
She had fond memories of being fitted for fancy dresses.
Okay, but no funny business.
With fervor, he measured the two.
Now I will make the most beautiful dresses on the island.
What's your name, crazy guy?
Dahlia was a little bit embarrassed from being measured, as she had never had it happen before.
I am so sorry. I should have led with that. My name is Alexander. I'm a tailor.
I gathered that.
Lahara laughed.
Nice to meet you. I'm Lahara, and this is Dahlia.
She shook his hand, followed by Dahlia reluctantly echoing the motion.
Now, if you'll allow it, I must be off to find someone.
Hey, Alexander?
Yes.
He was wondering if Lahara might be mad at his forward behavior.
We were just going to go see the sights around town. If you want to tag along, it might help in whatever you are searching for.
He smiled.
It's actually a who that I am searching for.
Dahlia's anxiety was rising a bit. Now there were two people she'd have to worry about hiding her thoughts from. Anja and Virgil were waiting for some minuscule catalyst to break their stare down. As they were still, they were both formulating their plans of action for whenever the moment arrived. The protests were too loud to ignore, and this would play to Virgil's favor. Any second now, and someone would make their first move. Anya wanted to be the one, but the moment she did, it would trigger Virgil, who would also make his move instantly afterwards. Conjure grenade is how Anya would lead her attack. She knew that as soon as she conjured her three grenades, Virgil would likely strike. She figured his mancatcher would have some role with any hatsus he had. An attack with it would probably come first, is what she was planning for. Virgil's attention was placed on the protests to the right. There would be cover from the village shacks, breaking Anya's line of sight, which would help him no matter what abilities she had, he figured. Without wasting any more time, Anya conjured a grenade in each hand, two of her ability. Fear is the worst enemy. The one in her left hand contained a cocktail of fears, including paranoia and doubt, which would surely take away his focus. The other contained the fear of losing control. She thought this would be especially applicable considering how he carried a mancatcher with him and the implications of the uses a mancatcher has. Then she conjured one Rorschach senses grenade to facilitate stealth. At first sight, Virgil ran to his right, in between the two shacks, towards the protesters. He'd need the people to use his ability, but it could be troublesome if the sight of him running up with a mancatcher causes panic. Anya followed down to trail to where Virgil was standing with the intent of throwing the grenades at Virgil, which would secure her the combat advantage. At the same moment, Zero and Maxwell had made it past the swarm of people at the city's edge. They were now walking down towards the center. Little did they know, Alexander had made it through this exact path a handful of minutes before them and was heading towards the city, stopping off in bars as he went. He was no drinker. He was on a search. Zero was thinking about Gorik, heading to what was most likely the police station. The police must have asked him for help, he thought. Maxwell was sticking up signs as he walked.
Max.
Yeah?
Is there any job you won't do?
Zero was finally noticing the content of the flyers Maxwell was putting up.
Let me think.
He wasn't sure what he should say to Zero.
Let me get back to you on that one.
He went about putting up more signs. Since it was dark, Zero figured it would be best not to go searching for Gorik yet. He'd be busy with the police, and encountering them wasn't something he cared for just yet. Maxwell was beginning to desire a place to stay for the night.
I think the hotel should be a little ways this way.
Zero contemplated.
We should head there.
He wasn't thinking about a place to stay. He was concerned with finding a bar that should be near there. CERN would be waiting for him the next day, and he thought it would be a decent use of time for his first full day on Cowtip to run into him. As they walked by a bar, Alexander came out.
"One more for tonight,"
he muttered to himself. He was still searching. Anywhere there might be groupings of people, he might be able to find someone who'd know. There'd need to be some kind of resource he could use. Maybe the police could be of help. He asked himself many questions as he meandered towards the next bar the patrons at the place he just exited had pointed him to. A police car sped down the road. Zero and Max briefly stopped to watch it. Alexander almost chased a ferret to see if he could ask a question. He denied that thought any further progression, as it seemed too unreasonable to him that an officer would humor him after such a stunt. The squad car was being driven by Officer Lamino, who was attempting to meet up with the rest of the officers on duty nearby. However, while they were dealing with the main street so that the bus line could run unhindered, Lamino was making his way straight to the border of Cemeterium and the village known as Fisher's Paradise, where he planned to cut over to meet the rest. Anya threw the grenade infused with a fear of loss of control at Virgil, but he swatted it away with his man-catcher, which gave him enough reach so that it wouldn't detonate by his aura or reach for a direct hit should it be set to detonate that way. She flipped the switch on the other fear is the worst enemy to thought detonation and moved in closer to try and disorient him with the combination of paranoia and Rorschach senses which would cause Virgil to hallucinate. Virgil didn't want to fly, or else he might frighten most of the people away. Luckily for him, they were Morrow focused on the squad car that just pulled up. Anya decided not to follow straight behind, else she might fall into a trap he laid. Instead, she worked her way around one of the shacks and tried to get a different angle of sight on him. He had already used Mancatcher on some of the protesters. The ability uses his Mancatcher to take control of someone for 6 hours. Anya witnessed the process on a few protesters and prepared to toss her grenades. However, Officer Lamino had taken notice of the Mancatcher being used on the protesters and rushed with his gun drawn. Virgil confronted him. Using his ability, he had protesters slowly surround Lamino.
"Put the weapon down!"
Lamino was shouting. He was sure it would attract the other officers. Anja tossed a thought detonated grenade up, and the blast hit both of them before Virgil could swat it away. Lamino and Virgil were now being overcome with paranoia and doubt. Virgil used this opportunity to catch Lamino, but he wasn't sure if he was being careful enough to block and protect himself, so he sent protesters around to hunt after Anya. As soon as Lamino was finished being captured, Virgil used Fly to ride on his man-catcher, up high where he would be sure he'd be safe. Despite this plan, he still felt as though something or someone could come at him at any point and flew around erratically. On the ground, Anya was trying to keep safe from the wandering protesters. It seemed they weren't affected by Virgil's paranoia, or at least not noticeably. She needed to test out her abilities on them. She might be able to get Virgil in the air with Rorschach's senses, but she must deal with being caught first. She tossed the grenade at a swarm of captured people, including Lamino. She could not tell if they were affected, unfortunately, since they were commanded to search the area, it might not matter if they were hallucinating or not. She used her physical abilities to climb the shack nearest her and then hop along the roofs. She looked up at Virgil in the sky.
"I guess we're at a stalemate right now."
"Dan, Shen, we might have to try a different strategy out."
Whisk was staring at Saxa, who was ready to chase after Candy. Before either did anything, he sent his arm into the woods to grab her. He'd have to find her first. Shen, in his transformed state, was draining a lot of Nen from Whisk, and Saxa could sense it. He knew it wouldn't be long before Whisk would be depleted. Whisk hopped on top of Shen and ran into the woods after Candy.
"Well, I guess I'm going to spring their trap."
Saxa was also noticing the blood he lost. Before following, he dove over at the carcass on the ground and took a meaty bite. Then, on his three limbs, he sprung forward to follow through the forest.
3 minutes.
He glanced at where his arm was severed.
"I have 3 minutes to get it back, but I need it separate for just a bit longer."
Candy was using her increased speed to bounce from treetop to treetop in an unpredictable manner. After locating Xaxa as he was moving, she circled him with bounces. When she hit a tree behind Xaxa, she lunged forward at him and kicked him in the back of the head with extra strength. Xaxa was disoriented from the blow, but he could hear Whisk riding Shen coming towards him. He rolled to the side and crawled around a tree, using the dark as a camouflage. Whisk and Shen rode past, sticking to their new plan of guerrilla warfare against him. Saxa regained his vision.
That won't always work, Ms. Kix.
He positioned himself in the middle of an encirclement of trees. Candy began bouncing around Xaxa, who was turning, noticing she was jumping to the trees behind him. Whisk and Shen were circling around as well, trying to distract Xaxa.
Guess it's time.
Xaxa then positioned his back towards a large tree as he faced Whisk and Shen on their circling path. Candy jumped at the tree behind him, and using her increased jumping strength, bounced towards Xaxa. As this happened, Whisk and Shen began running towards Xaxa, slightly circling him. Xaxa's arm flew in like a missile and collided head-on with Shen's face, sending Whisk flying forward. Flipping around to face her, Xaxa grabbed Candy with his superior speed. Before she could shake loose, Xaxa's arm flew back to him, and he reconnected before his 3 minutes were up. Candy, meanwhile, only had about one more minute of enhanced legs. Using both arms now, Xaxa had her locked in a hold, and also prevented any further blood loss by sealing the wound with fresh meal, reattaching his severed body parts by eating raw flesh. Candy, now immobilized, and Shen, very dazed and barely conscious, had to rely on Whisk now. But Candy still had one more trick up her sleeve. Using Spice of Life, Candy emitted a spicy aura around her. The spice entered Xaxa's eyes and mouth.
This is delicious,
he announced to her. He was tempted to take a bite out of her when Whisk, undetected by Xaxa's overwhelmed senses, rushed Xaxa with his sword. Whisk swung it at Xaxa's head. The sword broke. Xaxa immediately dropped Candy and viciously attacked Whisk, smacking him down and stomping on his leg before pinning him down. Candy tried to stab him in the back with her knife, but he wiggled to the side and then bit the knife, preventing her from trying it again. Blood from Saxa's mouth was dripping down onto Whisk, who was suffering from exhaustion after Shen used up so much Nen. If Shen didn't revert back, he would begin leeching from Candy. Since the sword broke, however, Whisk knew that a blow like that to the head would mean death for Xaxa, due to the condition of the sword. Still, Shen couldn't attack while Candy was on Xaxa's back, and they were on top of Whisk. If Candy let go of the knife, Xaxa would have a weapon to use, which wouldn't be much good for them. Frustrated, Candy yelled,
"Why are you attacking us?"
Xaxa paused, then spit out the knife to speak, prompting Candy to jump back.
"What are you talking about? You attacked me."
"What?"
Whisk was out of breath.
"You came up to us and attacked us."
Candy was livid.
"No, I didn't."
He thought back to the exchange they had before the fight.
"I said, fond of nature, are we? Me too, because I like nature. I thought I'd get the chance to converse with some people tonight."
"Then you said, thing about nature is, you've got to be careful of predators while you stretched your arms out, which was very ominous."
Xaxa laughed.
"I love hunting on all fours, but it does put a strain on your shoulders. Plus, I had to drag that carcass along with me. You ever hear of dead weight?"
Whisk made another remark with his fading air.
"You've got to be kidding me."
"Are you trying to tell me that while Whisk and I were peacefully enjoying the fire, you came up to talk with us and join us?"
"Sure. It looked like a good time, to be honest."
Xaxa was feeling relief.
"You don't see how what you said and did looks a certain way?"
"Well, I see it now, but I honestly just thought you guys were really protective. I always enjoy a fight, especially when I'm looking for a good fighter."
"I can't believe this."
Candy was flabbergasted.
"Well, you must be Candy. He must be Whisk. And the dog?"
Whisk answered,
"That's Shen. He noticed you before we did. Felt danger."
"That seems natural."
Saxa was very nonchalant about it. With disbelief, the group wandered back to the fire, which was beginning to dwindle. Whisk struggled with his soreness to put some wood on the fire. Shen was tired and in his normal form lay by Whisk, still weary of Xaxa. Candy ate some more food, but not much. She mostly prepared the meat for the next day, so it wouldn't go bad. Xaxa ate a bunch of the carcass, saving little for breakfast.
"You eat it raw like that all the time?"
Candy was disgusted.
"I grew up doing it, and now I prefer it to other ways, honestly. No offense."
He chewed some bone.
"Could you do me a favor and get some of that Nen on this meat here?"
He held out a torn muscle from the beast.
"I'm a little tired, actually."
"Oh, sorry."
He popped the flesh in his mouth.
You know, with spicy Nen like that, you'd probably better watch your back when you sleep. It might make you a better meal. I'm sure Whisk knows what I'm talking about, having just now tasted seasoned meat, right?
Candy glared at him. Whisk felt uneasy. Shen was asleep.
There you go, doing it again!
Candy was not pleased.
What do you mean?
Whisk decided to take the response before Candy got too worked up.
You made it seem like you were implying you were going to eat her.
Oh.
Xaxa rubbed the back of his head.
Shit, I'm bad at this.
He began chuckling. To change the subject, Whisk thought he'd spark up some conversation. Xaxa had pulled out a book and was writing in it.
Is that your diary or something?
Not exactly.
He stopped writing.
I keep a log of every Nen user I've come across. Their abilities, their personalities, anything interesting. Then, I eventually share them.
So are you going to ask us about our pasts or something?
Candy was still irritated.
Maybe if you two don't mind.
I don't mind.
Whisk was trying to keep things civil, as he hadn't the strength for another bout.
Well then, Whisk, how's your family?
Well, I love my grandparents. They wound up raising me, really. My parents were always busy, so I wound up being much closer to my brother than anyone else.
Hey, that's something we have in common.
Xaxa was energetic, despite the fight.
My grandparents were great. I really loved them.
Loved?
Till I said goodbye to them.
Candy rolled over, surprised by the tone of his voice. He sounded more hollow than before.
Oh, I'm sorry. What about your brother? Where's he now?
My parents were great, don't get me wrong. I love them. My love for them was just eclipsed by my love for my dog and brother.
Shen?
Candy was now interested.
Shinaga was actually the reason. You see, we were a family of distillers. But one day, a fire caught the distillery on fire, which was a part of our house, since we were small time. Everyone died, except me and Shen, because I was walking him.
Xaxa and Candy were quiet for a moment. Xaxa thought it best not to ask Whisk too many more questions. Candy shifted from the tragedy.
What about your brother, Xaxa?
Prison. A special kind. He's so strong, Thazeth is. I told him to stay in prison. It would do him some good for developing as a person, I mean.
Candy looked over at Whisk. The tragedy must have been a long time ago, as he wasn't too affected by talking about it. She directed her attention back at Xaxa.
Were you always a cannibal?
Well, I never met my parents, so it was just Thazeth and I. We wound up having to live off of the bodies that were dropping by the day in town. There was no shortage. Crime was at an all-time high there. It was no place for kids, but we managed.
He began laughing for some reason.
And we eventually learned that most of the people there were so damn fragile.
He laughed. But Candy and Whisk couldn't figure out why. Candy began thinking to herself,
what did I get myself into?
As she heard their turbulent pasts.
What about you, Candy?
I sort of grew up around the restaurant industry.
That makes sense.
Whisk was thinking on the meat she prepared for him earlier.
I had a bit of a reputation. My food was well reviewed and attracted many. Eventually, this led to me running into gourmet hunters. It was like a whole new world opened up to me. There was a different level above what I previously thought possible in the culinary industry. It consumed me. So, I became a hunter.
You're a hunter?
Whisk seemed surprised.
Yep.
But you're so young. I thought hunters were all grizzled warriors.
Xaxa chimed.
I've met many hunters, and most of them actually are pretty young.
He was thinking back on some people he'd met.
You don't always get a chance to live long as a hunter. The longer you're a hunter, the more chances you have of losing your life.
They were all quiet again. Whisk threw some twigs on the fire. Candy wanted to lighten the mood again, as Xaxa was feverishly writing.
Xaxa, what are some interesting Nen users you've run into?
Oh, let me think.
He flipped through the book.
That's right. I came across a man with multiple personality disorder, and each personality was a different Nen type. Really fun fighter. Real mess to be around, though. I'm pretty sure he's dead now, with his erratic actions. I know someone named Leiden, who's actually the reason I'm here. He met someone who wanted extreme speed and strength.
Took another bite.
He also wanted the ability to heal himself by drinking blood, but but the condition was that he'd die in the sunlight. What a cook.
Wow.
Whisk was tired.
I couldn't give up the sun.
You said that Liban guy sent you here? You also said you were looking for someone strong?
Yeah, a guy named Shivra Njarl. Liban and I both like seeing Nen users in action. And this Shivra guy is supposed to be an anomaly of sorts.
This Liban guy a friend?
Whisk was about to fall asleep.
An ally, absolutely. But a friend? I don't know. It's tough to say with him. You'd know if you'd meet.
Whisk was dozing off. Candy was staring at the stars. Something about what Xaxa said was sticking with her. Shen was long asleep after tiring out during the fight.
Hey, Candy.
Xaxa whispered so that Whisk wouldn't awake.
There's a nice restaurant here. I won't be going into the city. But if you do, you should check that out. As a culinary expert, yourself.
Okay.
She didn't really know how else to react to that. She was staring up at the sky, while Xaxa seemed to instantly fall asleep, huddled around the remains of his food. The fire dwindled. Eventually, Candy fell asleep too. The moon fell and the sun took its place, its rays giving a natural waking to the group surrounding what now was a pile of ash in a small circle of rocks. Shen awoke first, and when he got up to urinate, Whisk was also awakened as he was using Shen as a pillow. Xaxa shortly followed.
Xaxa, where are we going to look now?
I still don't think he'll be in the city. There's a whole bunch of people looking to kill him that will end up there. I think he probably knows that. I assume he'll stay in the forest and fight anyone who might find him. It makes more sense than fighting in the city.
Interesting. Do you think he'd find us here?
I don't think he'll be moving much. I'm sure he has his own little hiding place.
Good morning, you two.
Candy rolled over to face them.
Morning, Candy.
Whisk said as Xaxa dug into his slightly rotten breakfast.
For some reason, I feel like today is going to be a painful one.
Whisk said to himself, Candy and Xaxa oblivious. The first night on Cowtip for many people was now over, and the first full day just beginning. Off in the distance, a storm front was moving towards the island.